This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the Battery Doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Little Bob here. It's America's 250th birthday, so shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. We've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, and those signature Bob-a-pedic seats. So stop into Bob's Discount Furniture or shop online at mybobs.com, where America shops for furniture.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex is back after his birthday week off.
Boy, he looks older, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. His hair's gray. I didn't know.
I feel older. I mean, sometimes I swear to God I'm losing my mind. Like this morning when I got here, I couldn't even find my badge. Like I set it on my lap to get in, and I'm like, it's right on your lap.
How old are you?
36.
Turn off your mic.
Yes, sir.
He's only half my age. I'm 72.
Yeah,
basically.
There you go.
Mr. Anyway. Kelly, before you take off.
Yes.
The Olympic trials are here.
Yes,
I
gymnastics.
I know if the Olympic trials for Winter Olympics, you'd want to be on the hockey team.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Summer Olympics, what sport would you want to go for?
You know, gymnastics. Okay. I was sitting there watching the hockey game last night, and somebody tweeted out Simone Biles, one of her routines. And I paused the hockey game, and I watched, and wow. Just amazing what she does. So gymnastics is right up there. I love basketball, of course. So those are probably two of my favorites when it comes to summer.
Ah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Simone Biles and the men, the gymnastic men are incredible.
Yes.
How they can hold themselves on those rings and do all that stuff. Gee, mini Christmas. I can't even do a pull-up. So yeah, gymnastics is one I enjoy watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
what about you?
Well, I would probably want to do something a little bit more abstract.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if they still have this, but I think it was a hammer throw.
Oh, yeah.
Where you had a chain and a ball on the end of it, and you spun around in a circle and let it fly. That would be my sport.
I'm just glad they have that net in case you throw it backwards. Right. You know, you're spinning around. Right. It's like, where am I going to let this go? Oh, sorry.
That, four. To me.
What do you yell if the hammer goes the wrong direction? Four? I don't know.
Anything that you can spin and do some kind of sport, I think is great.
That'd be fun, yeah. Yeah. We'll have to try that sometime.
Yeah, exactly. With the other staff members.
Yes, there you go.
KMOX Olympics, yes. All right, folks, it's Saturday morning, and we get together and have a discussion about your backyard, front yard, side yard. Oh, those taste of the tropics. Speaking of tropics, man, the humidity yesterday, it was like walking underwater. It was unbelievable. So your house plants, they love it. Not all of them, of course, because you might have some cactus or succulents or things like that. But the majority of them come from that part of the world that that kind of stuff happens all the time. What is potting mix, by the way, and how should I improve my soil before I do my planting in the fall? Or should I bother even improving the soil? Should I be doing any pruning, shearing, whatever? Diseases, bugs, information. I'll share my thoughts, help you orchestrate and solidify maybe your options. Final judgment of action is going to be on your shoulders. And this is your show, by the way, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. And remember, if you weren't there, I would not be here. Another very important player is Alex, back after, like I said, a week off for a birthday. And he's got a shirt that says, Saturdays are for dads. For the dad, sorry. But anyway, that's not his birthday. That's for Father's Day. But anyway, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation if you like. And it's called a walk and talk. Go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving today. The Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting. Last Sunday was the first day of summer, so we can understand why it's getting a little bit humid and everything else. And as tradition has it, when there's a seasonal change, I do the walk and talk around my home. So anyway, we're at the corner of Christie Park and the northeast corner, and it's really kind of a casual area, this part of the park. There's really nothing developed in there. It's just trees and lawn and wildlife and birds and some wildlife, meaning squirrels for the most part. There's a couple of Cooper's hawks that are in there. And the lawn is really kind of, let's say, wildflowers, or if you want to call them weeds, it doesn't really matter. They're green. That's perfect. That's what my father said growing up. If it's green, it's good. Who cares? And anyway, along the east side of our property, that's a space between the garage and the alley. There's a linear bed there that's dominated by 5 foot plus, up to 5 feet, coneflowers. I mean, they are absolutely spectacular, and they've been blooming for over a month now, so they still got a while to go, I can tell by looking at the foliage. There's some other things in there as well. There's some ironweed, because last year we, for the anniversary metal type thing, it was supposed to be iron. I said, I don't really want to get something iron. So we got ironweed instead. There's lemon verbena in there. There's some sedum and phlox as well. And a little boxwood. Not a little boxwood, a pretty good sized boxwood, but it's a small leaf boxwood. There's various island plantings that were created by the sort of the intersection of the driveway, sidewalk, and street. And that's dominated by sweet alyssum and several different types of sedums and yellow moneywort as well. Some people call it yellow creeping Jenny. Along one stretch of sidewalk, that's where I poured down bird seed. So that place is, it's total insanity. So, but I can look right out the window and watch all the different varieties of birds that come and to the buffet that I provide for them. The three sugar maples are our street trees, and they frame our house. The zoysia lawn really is pretty striking this time of year, the dark green color, and I fertilized it once already, and today after the show, I'll probably fertilize again for my monthly fertilization. There's around the house a four-foot-wide steel-edged river rock bed that virtually embraces the house entirely. And the plantings along there, which would be kind of the traditional foundation plantings, there's Tradescantia, which is a spiderwort, a woodland fern, Asiatic lilies, purple coral bells, hostas, more yellow moneywort, sedums, boxwood, cypress, mugo pine, and Japanese painted fern. I've got lots of pots and pots and window boxes both. One of the plants in my pots is Biden's perennial sunflower. So it's just like President Biden spells his name. So Tracy wants to take a picture of him and, you know, email it to him and say, do you know that there's a plant named after you? But actually not. That plant was around for a long time before he was. Anyway, there's lots of elephant ears. There's Cannas, begonias, wandering Jews, three different varieties. There's some annual dahlias. I've been a little bit disappointed with those. They're not really the bulbous type, but I thought they would be a little bit more spectacular than they are. You do have to deadhead them. If you don't, it's like, oh, it really slows the flowering process. There's some lantana, calla lilies, and many, many other colors to spice the aesthetic value of the outdoors. So anyway, welcome to summertime, and that was a tour de force of Tracy and my landscape. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Alex is producing, so when you call, all he needs is your first name and where you're calling from. So he doesn't need to know why you're calling or anything else. But do give us a call. We got some phone lines open. We've had some great lightning stuff. I guess it was two nights ago, starting about 3 o'clock in the morning. But here's a quote from Mark Twain. Thunder is good. Thunder is impressive. But it is lightning that does the work. And what happens is when there's lightning strikes, well, when you put nitrogen fertilizer or, you know, anything that has nitrogen on your ground, what it does is stays on the ground. The plants absorb as much as they possibly can. But after a few days, it actually heads up into the atmosphere. And then when we have lightning strikes, that brings that nitrogen out of the sky and down onto your plants. That's why everything is so bright green. It's not just the water or the rain washing everything off or anything else, but it's, you know, actually a light amount of fertilizer from the sky feeding your plant material. So I think everything looks really fantastic. As water droplets collide in the atmosphere, electrons are knocked free. I won't go into all this stuff, but I think the electrons being knocked free sounds really kind of cool. But anyway, so hopefully we'll have some more lightning and keep everything nice and bright and green. Let's start the day off at FJ's. Hi, FJ. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard of a Pride of Barbados or a Mexican redbird. But it's I've been trying to grow it from a seed for the last couple of years. It's a kind of a desert plant. A lot of times you find them in Arizona. And I'm wondering if I'm using the wrong soil. I've been just using potting mix. I'm wondering if I should be using more of like a cactus mix.
Yeah, I would certainly do that. Because, I mean,
Pretty much nothing happens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Even though potting mix is well-drained and everything else, there's certain elements that the desert or, you know, cactus mix, you know, they blend into that, and that would probably help with the, you know, help with the seed germination and everything else. Now, are you germinating them, you know, just in the pot? Or are you trying to germinate them, let's say, in a flat like nurseries do, or how are you doing it?
Well, I started just like in a wet paper towel for a while, and then nothing happened, and then I tried planting it in like a small shallow cup. Basically with drainage in it.
I would say, you know, just put them in a 6-inch black plastic nursery pot and just kind of lay them on the surface of the desert cactus mix, potting mix, and just pat them down a little bit and just let them just kind of keep it slightly damp. Don't let it in.
Okay.
And that would probably be going to be your best shot.
So you don't actually have to cover it much, just kind of.
Yeah, because I mean, what you're trying to do is duplicate what, if the plant was in nature, it's not going to cover it necessarily. The seeds are just going to drop, yep. and then, you know, they can get, let's say, pushed down a little bit by rains or things along that line.
Okay. And the other question I have is on getting your soil tested. I know a lot of places closed down during the pandemic. Do you know any places now that continue to do it?
Well, I mean, I don't know what part of town you live in, but the University of Missouri has an extension office in Kirkwood, and you could do it there. There's private companies over in Belleville that actually do it as well. So,
I'm not far from Kirkwood. I thought that one had kind of closed down during the pandemic, but maybe it hadn't.
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, it's University of Missouri, so basically what they're doing is just they're shipping it for you as opposed to you shipping it down to Columbia.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure. And good luck with germinating your seed. Yeah, that's really kind of fun to do that kind of stuff. So we, when we were in Arizona a few years ago, I bought a bunch of, let's say, mixed cactus seeds. And so I have them in a window box, and I just sprinkle them in there. And, I mean, some of them have really, really kind of taken off. They're still very small, but growing them from seed. Some of them germinated, and then they didn't do so well. So you roll dice anytime you do anything from seed. Let's head over to Jerry's yard, and he lives in Spanish Lake. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I would like to know about, I have oak trees, and I have hundreds of little seedlings coming up. What can I do to get rid of those seedlings? And also, the guy that was asking about dropping your soil sample out, I was just out to the Missouri in Kirkwood on Monroe, so that place is open.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying your oak trees are dropping acorns and the squirrels are planting the acorns? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, they're all over the place. So I want to know, how can I kill those saplings?
I mean, you could use an herbicide on them because they're just newly germinated. But beyond that, there's, you know, I mean, you could
dig them out.
Yeah, you could do that. Or, I mean, a couple inches of mulch over the top of them should probably help, you know, control that as well.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so, but if you're going to do the mulch, don't pile it up under the trunk at all. So, and most of the seedlings are going to be out towards the extension of the branches as opposed to close in. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of work. But you're kind of lucky because a lot of times you see oak trees and you don't see any kind of anything that's germinated underneath them. But that should be a little bit of fun. So, let's go over to Gene's yard now. Hi, Gene.
Hi, I have a question. We have two large oak trees that got that gall on them.
Right.
And there are a few branches that are dying off, and we're thinking about taking the trees down and having the stumps ground out. And they tell us they're going to leave those grindings in that hole instead of taking them out and then us put dirt in there. Is that a good idea? Would that attract termites?
No, it won't attract termites, but it won't... Those stump grindings will prevent virtually anything from being able to grow in that spot. So it's going to be problematic anyway. But let's say, fresh wood, because that's what the grinding is going to be. What that does is bind up nutrients and moisture and everything else and creates, and it's still, even though they're little bitty pieces, it's still almost like a hardwood floor in that spot. So it's going to be a tough circumstance, even if they took all the stump grindings out and you backfilled it with a topsoil compost mix, it's going to be a rough circumstance. So just realize that. But to me, when they say they're just going to leave the stump grindings there so you don't have a hole, that's doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, so we just want the grindings out, correct?
Right, exactly. And then you're still going to have a hard time growing anything in that spot. So just realize that, whether you're trying to grow grass or ground covers or anything else.
Oh, okay. Even the grass will have a hard time.
Oh, absolutely. And it's because, the stump grindings are there, but still the existing root system that went out from the trunk and all those roots are still there, and they're still going to be competing because they don't know they've been beheaded, they're going to compete for nutrients and moisture and everything else. So that's where the problem comes.
Oh, okay.
So just be patient. It's going to take a couple of years before you're going to have good success on getting anything to grow in this spot.
Okay. All right. I just was concerned about, you know, the grindings being in there, that they would cause termites or something.
Yeah.
We didn't want that.
Yeah, definitely not termites, but they just prevent, they'll make it, until that would totally break down, which is going to take multiple years, it's just going to extend the process where you're not going to have just sort of a scar in your landscape, let's put it that way.
So I actually want them to take the grindings out,
yes,
correct?
Yes, right. Even if it costs a little bit more, tell them to get rid of them.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the information.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. Phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. If you're growing chrysanthemums and you've been pinching them back, 4th of July is about the last time you should pinch them. That should make it so they're going to be nice, thick, and dense, kind of a little bitty bush as opposed to this long, elongated, you know, sunflowers. That's because chrysanthemums are in the sunflower family. So what that does also is aesthetically make the, let's say, the chrysanthemum plant look better, but also increases the number of fall blooms. But no pinching back after the 4th of July, so you got one more, you know, shot at pinching back. Other things, make sure that you continue to fertilize your annuals every 2 weeks. That's the way that you're going to have the best amount of flowers, the best aesthetic value off them for the rest of the season. And for probably you're going to fertilize them all the way up until maybe mid-September, and then you're going to have them doing pretty well all the way up till probably close to Thanksgiving, if not. Yeah, we never know what our weather's going to do. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go to Brian, and he lives in Columbia, Illinois. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? Got a quick question. I got a new area that we backfilled. It's basically, it's about 1,500 square feet of dirt. What's my best chance of getting any kind of temporary grass this year?
Temporary? I mean, you could use an annual rye and get that. You should. It all depends on how horrible this soil was. Is it just clay soil from, like, digging out a basement or something?
Yeah. Well, it's backfilling a retaining wall, and so we got a new, more or less level area. Then I was thinking about just kind of throwing some of the St. Louis composting soil on top to try to help it out a little bit. And it's basically going to get ripped out again next year for new construction.
So, yeah, basically you can do that, but just make sure you just don't put a layer of anything in there. You got to mix it in with the existing horrible stuff. If you don't mix it, it's the chance of success is going to be minimal.
Okay, would you put a little bit of straw or anything like that down, or just really seed it heavy?
Putting, let's say, an extraordinary amount of seed down doesn't mean it's going to have, you know, thicker lawn by any means. So whatever rate, whatever seed that you get, they say put this, and it's hard to know because they're going to say, you know, spread of the square footage you have, you need to spread a pound or whatever it happens to be. It's tough to really do. So just when you sprinkle the seed, just when you look down, you want to make sure that none of the seed is actually laying on top of each other. So that's the best way to do it. But mix, you know, mix something in with that, you know, let's say subsoil that you're going to be using for a temporary type thing.
Okay. All right. And then just water it pretty heavily, I guess, depending on the weather the next few weeks.
Yeah, daily for the first, you know, probably 2 weeks. Then depending upon the weather and everything else, that's going to determine how much. Because at the end of 2 weeks, with the soil temperatures and everything as they are, it should be starting to germinate at that time.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah. And also, if you don't want to use grass seed, you might consider using clover, like Dutch white clover, and see if that can give you some, or a combination of the two, because you're going to tear it up anyway.
Right. Will that hold up with the heat if we have a really hot August?
Oh, yeah.
With new
clover.
Yeah.
Clover could care less.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look at that.
All right.
Awesome. Okay, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's go over to Ruben's yard now. Hi, Ruben.
Hey, hi there. So I have several large pin oaks in my yard, and this year I had not noticed it previously, but they seem to be dropping the tips off of the branches, or maybe a 6-inch section. And in the sections, all the leaves are still green. They look healthy and alive. And a lot of the sections actually have what I would call a burl, like a round brown thing kind of like that wraps around the edge, the ends of these leaves. Now, I don't know if that's normal or not. So my question is this some sort of a disease? I've never noticed it before. And what are the burls?
Well, those round balls are actually called gall, G-A-L-L. And what it is, it's a type of wasp that lives in your trees. They love the red oaks, which a pin oak is part of the red oak group. And the female lays the eggs. She penetrates the stem right where you're talking about, lays the eggs in there. And then what it does is a protective measure for this particular wasp, even though it's not the classic type wasp, it causes that bloated growth. And that protects the larvae that's going to be hatching in there from the eggs. So the fact you haven't had it up till now, the fact that you're getting it now, that you're never going to have a point when you don't have it again. So you've been lucky all the way up to this time. But the galls are very, very, common in a lot of members, pin oak being the majority, because that's the one that's planted most often of the red oak group.
So are the galls, is the weight of the galls, or what's causing the tips of those branches to drop all over my yard?
Yeah, that's part of it for sure. And what it does is also weaken that part, that's right where the gall is. And with these stronger winds, but you're still going to start looking up in your tree, you're going to see galls. There's a lot of galls that are still up there that haven't fallen.
And these are going to eventually emerge with wasps?
Right, but non-stinging wasp. And the wasps just live in the trees. Basically, they kind of live in the same tree where they were born. They're really kind of a weird group. So it's not going to be the classic wasp that we think of wasp, but it's just because of their, let's say, anatomy that they're classified as a wasp, but they're not something that's, going to be problematic for people. They're just problematic for the red, for the red oak group.
I mean, will they eventually be deleterious to the health of the tree?
Yeah, they can over time. I mean, it's not so much what they're going to do, but you can get so many galls on on some branches that the weight of that could actually start, rather than getting a little 6-inch section broken off, you start getting cracks on some of the major branches. Then you get moisture in there. Then you get heartwood rot, all those kind of things. So, but there's people that have had galls in their trees for decades, and their trees are still living. It's just that they're sick and tired of, having the galls there.
Well, I'm sick and tired of picking up the little tips. But no, hey, that. Thank you. I tried Googling this. I tried all kinds of different things. So I appreciate your wealth of knowledge. Thank you, sir.
Sure. And again, it's G-A-L-L. So just put that in, and you'll find out all kinds of crazy information related to those.
Okay, thank you.
Things. Yep. And now let's go to Elizabeth, and she lives in Afton. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I'm calling to talk to you about boxwood and barberry. I think it's Japanese barberry bushes that I have in several places in the front of my yard. And it seems like these things, they're probably 20 years old. But all of a sudden, they have, new life. And they have grown, and even though I have my lawn guy trim them back, they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm wondering, so now the problem is I can't even get in between them to dig out weeds. I have a sweet gum ball tree, with, tons of sweet gum balls.
Right.
I can't even get in there with a rake to rake those out. And I'm wondering if I can just whack them off maybe a third to a half, and if they come back, they come back, and if they don't, I guess they don't.
Right. Well, that's a good philosophy, because the chances of them coming back, if you cut them back halfway, is going to be minimal, because you're going to be cutting them back to where there probably isn't much foliage on either one of them. And so consequently, the buds that are on along this, that are still remaining on those stems are dysfunctional and they're probably not going to leaf back out.
Is there anything that you can suggest? And I'll tell you what happened, too. On one side, there were a couple that I thought, these are the barberries, and I thought they were basically dying. And I had the lawn man cut them back a couple years ago, and he said, you know, I think these are going to come back. I wanted him to dig them up just to get them out. And he marked them with an X, and sure as shooting, they came back. And so that's why I was wondering if my thought process would work for the rest of these branches, just so I could get in those beds and really clean them out right. And remulch and everything.
Yeah, the fact that, I mean, they were a couple years younger, but as a, you know, the shrubs get older and stuff, and how much you're cutting them back is, you know, can make a difference. And if you cut them back severely, and he's, you know, and let's say they put a new surge of growth out, that aesthetically is not going to be very, it takes multiple years before you're going to get a sort of the aesthetic value back.
Okay.
If it does come back.
Okay. All right. So you're suggesting I just leave them as they are, just have them routinely trimmed like I have been doing, and
either that or just
let the sweet gum balls just sit there?
Are they
in the weeds? And,
are they in like a hedge row? Is that what it is?
Yes, they're
alternating.
The section that's really kind of are in front of the. I have a bay window in the front of the house, and they're in that section there. So there's probably a good. Oh, there's also some holly bushes. There's three holly bushes in there too. So there's three of those, and there's probably 10 or 12 of the other bushes.
Right. So I mean, you could take a look and decide if you want to take out every other one. And see if that would work, or do, you know, go ahead and do what your thought process was. Go ahead and prune them and see what happens, you know, as a result of your pruning. They may recover, they may not. Obviously, the barberry, because they're deciduous and a little bit tougher, they're going to have a better chance of coming back than the boxwood will.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Pruning, and don't do the pruning in the summertime. I mean, I know that means you got to wait, but you could get some sunburn on the remaining foliage and all that kind of, you know, problematic type things.
Okay. So maybe in the, you know, in the fall.
Yeah, sometime
September,
after
October,
late August.
Kind of look at it. And,
right.
You know. Okay. And I have just one quick question that I just thought about. Last week you talked with a woman that had a question about Japanese maples, and you told her to trim the leaves off around the sides so they didn't spread so much. Can I do that now on my Japanese maple, or do I have to? Should I wait till the fall before?
Yeah, summertime pruning is not advisable because we don't know, our weather is just too screwy, and the sun can get intense, and you could get some sunburn on it, and it's going to be an aesthetic problem for the remaining of this, let's say, growing season.
Okay, because I've noticed this year, too, this little Japanese maple has expanded. It's now touching some of the house and some of the other bushes over there. So,
right.
But I should just wait for that, too, till maybe September, October, and then trim those back?
Yeah, you don't have to wait that, you know, until, let's say, mid to late August when the days start getting shorter.
Oh, okay.
And the sun's less intense. Even though the temperature still may be high, the sun, let's say, is less intense as far as sunburning any existing or remaining foliage, branches, or anything.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Folks, stay up with your weed control, whether you're using an herbicide, hand digging, or whatever you're doing, because you don't want these weeds to go to seed. So in other words, once they start making seed, then the seed drops, and you got, you know, problems for the future. So they're just guaranteeing they will be around, but you don't want them around. So stay on top of it. Let's go over to Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, I live in a subdivision, got a 3rd-acre lot, not a lot of grass. But sometimes I mow, and sometimes I bag, and sometimes I mulch. Is there a better time to do either one, or should one of those not even be done?
Well, bagging is not really to the advantage of your lawn. As long as you're mowing enough where when you're using, let's say, your mulching mower or setting or whatever it happens to be, that when you look back after you've just cut some area, you don't have a layer of clippings on top of the existing lawn. The reason why I'm saying that is because as fertilizer comes up through the soil, up through the root system, and into the grass, you know, grass blades, the tip is where it ends up. So if you bag those clippings, you know, you're basically taking some, you know, very subtle fertilizer away. So if you can mulch and just, like I say, mow it and mow often enough that you don't have like a layer of the clippings that you can see after you've run your mower over it, that's to the advantage.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, yeah, I mean, just keep cutting it. If you have to cut twice a week and or set your mower a little bit higher, then do that.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jerry. And let's go over to John Jard. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
You interested me when you said your coneflowers are, did you say 5 feet tall?
Yeah, up to 5 feet. There's some that are a little bit shorter, but there are some that are 5 feet.
I have five coneflowers that I planted one last year and two more. The others about 2 years ago. They're about 3 to 4 inches high. What's going on here?
I'm not sure because, I mean, I improved the soil and everything, but if they've been in the ground that long, they're only like, unless it's a variety, it's not the purple coneflower, Echinacea, then there's why they would be that small. Use it by the second or third year, they should be at least, you know, 15 to 18 inches.
Well, maybe a little fertilizer around them. I don't know the actual name of the coneflowers.
Right.
I have tomato plants planted also in a different area, not far away, and they're 3 feet tall or more.
Right.
So I wondered about that.
I do fertilize the coneflowers, that's for sure. So you might give them a shot.
Any particular a mixture of a fertilizer?
I just use like a Scott's blend for blooming plant material.
Well, I'll ask at the garden store.
Right, they've got it in dry and they've got liquid both.
Well, okay. I have some plants close to a tree line, and they're maybe 2 years. No, I think they're 1 year old now, and they're not achieving the height that is advertised.
Right. So it's just a matter of competition of the tree roots. I'm sorry, John. We're just about out of time. So, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you after the news. What?
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, it is the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving that shortly, but right now you can give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. Mr. Kelly, before you take off,
yes.
What's a raccoon story?
Haven't seen him in a while. Sparky hasn't been back as far as I can tell. But we did have a new visitor the other day in the middle of the daytime. Oh. No, I've got monkeys. That's a whole other story. A coyote.
Whoa.
Walked right up to the back fence. We've got our yard. Oh, probably 30 yards back to the back fence, maybe 20, something like that. And then there's a big pasture in the back, like a couple acres. And he apparently came from either the woods or the neighbors. They have chickens. So they're really concerned about that.
Sure.
But he like walked right up to the fence, and Sue said, "Hey, look at that." And I said, "Oh, that's not good." And I looked at him, and he looked at me and said, "Man, you're ugly." And he ran away. But he got close. And that was kind of, I've never seen that. had one that close.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so now we're dealing with a coyote.
Whoa.
But he hasn't, I don't think he's come up and caused any damage.
The raccoon probably called his brother.
Probably.
His cousin that's bigger.
Call out
over there and take care of these
exactly.
people.
Call out the heavy artillery.
Right,
you know? So, yeah, but I haven't seen the raccoon lately.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
So, Sparky's hiding somewhere.
thanks, Brian.
You bet.
And by the way, folks, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, cares for, ups and downs and all arounds of your annuals. And Mr. Kelly, your pansies still looking good?
Yes, they are.
All right. His pansies are still looking good. Your bulbs, your summer bulbs, yes, they should be looking really striking, not full-sized by any means yet. And your spring bulbs, the foliage should be gone on all those right now. Your edibles, your cool-seasoned vegetables and things like that, they're probably headed a little bit downhill. Ground covers, house plants, lawns, perennials, roses, tree shrubs, water gardens, and vines as well. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is Alex. He's producing. He answers the phone as well. So when you call, he just needs your first name and where you're calling from. I do spend my time on weekends and on during the week as well doing landscape consultations, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, that's where my email address and phone number are listed. This past week, Fairview Heights, maybe it was last week. No, I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But a very interesting yard. Lots of water features and things like that. So besides a pool, but the sounds of the water as you approach the front door and everything else was really nice. This gentleman was growing roses. He has 130 roses, but he had, unfortunately, a disease with his roses. So I gave him a consultation related to his rose circumstance. And it was really troubling for him because he spent a lot of time on a lot of plant material, but roses were his favorite. So anyway, if you want me to come and do a walk and talk, you can get my email address and phone number from my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and I'll come and share 40-plus years' experience with you. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for an individual or group or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. One of my favorite places, which is kind of close to us, not really close, but in the city, is Brightside St. Louis. And they're right at Kings Highway Southwest, where Vandeventer becomes Southwest. There's a public library there and everything else. But they also have a great demonstration garden. And today, or this time of year, basically, is the 10th birthday for their demonstration garden. It's a great place to go. I go there probably for good gardening strolls about once every, I don't know how many months, but just it changes. It has water movement. It has all kinds of plant material, giant sunflowers and butterflies and things like that. It's a really unique space, and it's not massive or anything, but it's still unique in its own way. And so anyway, happy birthday to the demonstration garden at Brightside St. Louis, again, at the corner of Southwest Vandeventer and Kings Highway. You can't, it's right. There's no way you could possibly miss this. And so anyway, happy birthday, demonstration garden. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Highline. Well, why don't we take a call or two? Let's go to Anna's. Hi, Anna.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
I'm calling about a red maple tree that I planted, probably about 6 weeks ago. It's just a small one, probably about an inch diameter or so. How do I make sure that it stays straight? It seems to be developing a little bit of a lean.
Well, that must be why it probably is leaning. It's not leaning because of the growth it's doing. So in other words, that soon it can't be leaning as a result of that. The root, the root system or the root ball when it was planted probably wasn't exactly done right, and that's why it appears to be leaning. So in other words, there was less soil on one side of the root ball down in the hole or something, and so consequently that's what's causing the lack of soil, let's say equal soil down in the hole and all the way around the root system is what's causing it to lean.
Okay, so is there anything that can be done about it now?
Well, what you could do is, if you want to, it's an inch caliper, so you can, if you want to, stake, or you can just wait again until, since it's a relatively new planting, and replant it in the fall. You might just go ahead and try to stake it and see if you can, you know, pull it back and see what happens as a result of that. And always when, okay, you're planting plant material, 3 times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% as deep. So in other words, the top of the root ball should be above the surrounding ground.
Right, right. Now, I've also been, you know, like one of the places that I read about watering it, you know, seemed to say, you know, water it about a gallon and a half every day for the first, for about the first 2 months. And that's pretty much the system that I've been using. Beyond that, do you have a recommendation? It kind of seemed to just, it said to just kind of taper it off and water as necessary. Would you agree with that, or would you suggest something different?
Well, a gallon and a half every day for 2.5 months, that is an extreme amount of water. So I would say, you know, a gallon or so for the first couple weeks. But beyond that, to keep doing it for 2+ months, I've never heard of that before. So that might be part of the problem. In other words, you've caused some erosion around the root system by the amount of watering that you're doing.
Okay.
So even though it's not erosion in the classic sense, it's still, the root system now has air pockets around it because the watering you've done have washed some of the soil away. And that might be because that might be causing the slanting.
Okay. The tree is looking really healthy.
Right.
So I'm hoping that, you know, it will pull itself back out, or I just wondered what you'd recommend.
Yeah, it's not near the large trees, is it? It's not growing, you know, with big trees behind it that could cause it to lean, but still it wouldn't be leaning through a natural growth process that quickly. So it's got to be something.
It does have trees, you know, on either side of it. I would say, you know, they're probably about 30 feet away from both sides of it. You know, I tried to make sure that it was getting its own sunlight and would not be towered over and sunlight from the other tree steal it away.
Right. So it sounds like you've put some good thought process in it. It's just, you know, like I said, there's something going on underneath the ground that's causing this to be tilted or slanting.
Okay. I appreciate your help.
Sure. My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Yep. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We're headed into Mary's yard. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good.
Good. Mike, the reason I'm calling is my husband and I have 2 very large oak trees in the backyard. They're probably about 60 years old. Last summer, one of them had a lot of dead branches, so we had to have it removed. And we're looking at the second one, and we're noticing the same thing. We think it has a fungus, and we've had somebody come out, and they're going to take it out. We are trying to put something in the backyard. We have no protection from sunlight. It's a western exposure, and so it's going to wreak some havoc on some plants that we have out there right now. But we tried taking a very small Yoshino cherry and planting it in the yard far away from where the stump was ground out. Within 2 weeks, it died, and we dug it back up, and we noticed there is a lot of moisture in the soil. So we had MSD come out. We've talked to American Water, and they're saying that it's not a water flow problem from either the neighbor's yard or anything coming from sewage. Could it possibly be that this large oak that was removed was absorbing so much moisture, and because it's no longer there, that moisture has no place to go?
No, that's not the case, because even though a tree's been removed and even stump ground out, the feeder roots, which, you know, run all the way out to where the actually the branches extended, the drip line, and a little bit beyond that, those root systems stay viable and continue to absorb nutrients and moisture for multiple years, each year getting less and less because it's not getting fed as a result of the tree being there and the actually it's the foliage that makes the food that shares with the root system. So, no, that has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
So my guess is, I don't know, you said it was a distance away, but my thinking is the feeder roots of the tree that has been removed or the other tree that's still there are in this area, and they're competing with anything that you're going to be planting in that space.
Okay. We pulled the small tree back up, and the hole was full of water, and we're seeing water seeping. So the only other thing we can think of is there's a natural spring that we don't know about.
I would think after all these years you would have known about it, but
certainly. Well, we thought so too, right? So we're just puzzled as to why we're getting so much water in this area, and what we can even plant there at this point. We're just holding off on doing anything.
Yeah, I would say you're probably wise. There are lots of trees, like say like a black gum, not a sweet gum, that can handle a wet situation, bald cypress. But it's a kind of a rare situation, but. Who knows? There's some quirky stuff going on. But, I mean, there hasn't been up until we've had that rain over the last week or so. We were already 3 inches behind on the normal rainfall. So the ground was really getting super dry. So the fact that this spot is or this location is wet is really kind of strange. And I would have thought you would have figured that out when you dug the hole to put it in there, because the water's not going to come just because you dug the hole. The water's going to be there, so I don't understand how this, where this is coming from by any means.
Okay. Well, you said cypress, bald cypress, or the black gum.
Both of those trees are regular type trees. They're not very fast. They're not super fast growing or anything else, but they can take wet soils.
Okay. Great, Mike. Thanks so much.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's see, where should we go? Let's go over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. I got maybe kind of a dumb question, but other than dying, do trees ever just stop growing as far as like height goes or width?
Well, sure they do. I mean, it's just like people. All people are not the same size, and we all stop growing at a certain height, depending upon individual. But a tree, depending upon what type of tree, certain trees are only going to get this high, X amount of feet, 20 feet, 10 feet, whatever it happens to be, versus ones that can get 50, 60 feet. So it's a genetic thing as much as anything.
Well, and that's what I actually knew that, but I have a little leaf linden.
Little leaf linden?
It's probably about 90 to 100 feet tall.
Whoa.
And and it just keeps getting taller and wider. And when I bought it, it's probably been in the ground 25 years. I know that it didn't say that it would get that big, and that's why I was asking that question.
Right. Yeah, I've never seen a linden tree that big, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's just I keep, cutting branches off and stuff, and it just keeps, maybe it's just an oddity or something.
Yeah,
who knows?
It could be, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's all I wanted to know.
All right. Well, thanks, Jim. And now let's go to Sherry's yard. Hi, Sherry.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I'm from St. Louis City. And I wanted to know, what can I do about a grass-like vine that's choking out my zoysia grass? Each year, it's getting worse and worse.
Oh, that's, that's a little bit tough because, if you put grass killer down, it's going to impact your zoysia grass. So it probably sounds like it might be Bermuda. So if it's, if it's a big, like, massive clump area of it, you can go after it and just kill that off by painting an herbicide right on it. And then, okay. But it's going to be a long, involved process to probably get rid of it entirely.
Okay, so when I put this herbicide on it, it's going to leave a bald spot, or
yes,
or
it's going to leave a it's going to leave a definitely an open spot. You're going to have to wait for about 2 weeks after you put the herbicide, after looks like it's dying off, before you can do anything as far as like getting some zoysia plugs or a piece of zoysia sod or whatever you want to do.
All right, and when's the best time to do this?
Probably would have been better to do it a little bit earlier, but as far as, if you don't mind looking at the, let's say, the dead patch, you can do it in the summertime, because zoysia is tough and it's going to be available at the garden centers as far as the sod or the plugs. So you can do it now if you want to, or you can wait until next year when it first starts greening up and you start to see the new growth coming. That's when you'd be putting the herbicide on the weedy grass, Bermuda probably, that you're trying to get rid of.
Yes, a lot of it. Well, thanks so much.
Sure. It's going to be a nightmare, let's put it that way.
I kind of figured that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. And now let's go to Shirley's. Hi, Shirley.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I seem to have a problem with rosette on my roses. Ooh. This is the second time I've had it, and I don't know how to take care of it as far as, can I still keep my roses and cut that back?
No. Basically, it's an internal disease, and it kills. So, I mean, whether it's at the botanical garden, public park, or you in your yard, once a rose has rose rosette, you got to get rid of it, because what happens is spider mites and stuff like that will feed onto that rose that has the problem. Then the wind can blow them, or they get blown to a rose that doesn't have it. Then they start feeding on the new rose, and they inject the rose rosette into it. So you have to get rid of them. There's nothing you can do. There's no application, nothing that will stop it.
Okay, so this is with already on the rose bush,
It's in the inside. It's in the veins.
Okay, so I bought roses with it on it. Well, is that correct?
Not necessarily. I mean, let's say the spider mites could have been blown in from somebody else's yard. So, I mean, you could have, but that's probably not necessarily going to be the case.
Okay. What I'm asking, is it caused by just the spider mites, or is it already on the rose?
The spider mites get the disease when they feed on a rose that has the problem. So the spider mites basically are transmitting the disease from from roses that already are affected by the rose rosette.
Okay, so that's the only way that it can be on there is from the spider mites?
For the most part. I mean, other insects can transmit it, but yeah, for the most part, it is just transmitted by, spider mites.
Okay, I was just wanting to know the cause, and I have to get rid of them, but could there be anything in the soil since I've had them twice?
No.
Is there anything that I can do to prevent it?
No, not really. I mean, just watch them, just monitor and watch them closely. I mean, Rose Rosette at Tower Grove Park, they've had it. At the Botanical Garden, they've had it. So, I mean, places with professional services, staff members and everything else, this is a problem that just, can occur. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to occur everywhere. But, it's a nasty internal disease that nothing can be done to stop it or prevent it or, to diminish it.
Okay, if I get rid of those and plant roses in the same place again, am I going to have a problem with that?
No, as long as the roses, if you have some existing roses that are going to stay, just so they're not affected with the rose rosette. But no, putting roses back in the spot where these were grown, as long as you're pulling out the entire rose, root system, and everything else, wouldn't be trouble.
Oh, okay. Is there anything I can spray with to keep the spider mites off?
Well, I mean, you use a miticide.
Okay. And that's something I can spray anytime?
Well, you just don't routinely spray it, or you could get a systemic type insecticide. So in other words, one that's going to be absorbed through the root system that will go up through the stems and into the leaves and everything else that will kill anything that's going to be feeding, on the rose.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We're headed to Collinsville and going into Gary's yard. Hi, Gary.
Yes, Mike, I got a couple questions about my asparagus. I got a well-established spot for it, and I've noticed that 5 feet out of the bed, I'm getting asparagus coming up.
Right.
Can I dig that up and transplant it back into the area I want to keep them in? And if so, what's the best time? Another question would be, I'd like to experiment with some white asparagus. I don't really want to use dirt to make mounds over them. Could I use a mulch in the springtime, and what kind of mulch?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned about using the mulch because, you know, if I was going to use a mulch, I'd use like a leaf mulch, not a wood mulch, because the wood mulch might have an adverse impact on it. And as far as digging up the runners, you would do that in the springtime when the asparagus is available at the garden centers. So in other words, you're going to have to take a marker and, you know, like as the asparagus season ends, you know, just put a dot right where the asparagus was coming out away from the, let's say, the bed where you want it to be. That way you'll know where to dig down to get the root system.
Okay, yes. And it's growing now. I'm letting it grow. And I think when it dies out, I'm going to cut it back. I guess on that runner, I could put like a little flag there so I know
exactly
the time where it's
right
at. So you don't recommend using, I mean, I use a lot of leaf mulch,
right?
Leaf and grass, yeah, that there. But now you see, that would be okay, but not a regular mulch. I don't use wood chip mulch.
Okay, so yeah, the woods.
Well, maybe something from St. Louis compost.
Well, they have a leaf mulch there, so I mean, but there's.
Okay.
I mean, you could do compost if you want to. That would be.
Oh,
I mean,
okay. Well, yes, I compost everything.
Okay.
Or as much as possible.
Okay. So, I mean,
I could use that too.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you then.
Sure.
Oh, and I wanted one more thing. I wanted to wish you a happy birthday coming up. <this Wednesday>.
Yeah, next week, June 30th, yeah. I'll be 72 years old.
Yeah, right. I did want to mention the age, but yeah, and I hope that they enjoy you many more years on this show. I really love it. I think everybody else, by the way they call it, they do too.
Well, thanks. Greatly appreciate
okay,
it, Gary.
Thank you.
Yep. And now let's head over to Jules in University City. Hi, Jules.
Hi. Well, first thing, happy birthday, youngster. And you may have covered this already, but I have millions of aphids on my crepe myrtle.
Ooh.
And not a ladybug in sight. Last year I waited, and ladybugs and their larvae came out, and in a week or so devastated the aphids.
Right.
But now they're just taking over, and I try spraying, and there are just so many leaves that I can't cover this whole thing. So is there any other way, anything that we can do that? And it seems they pick on some other things, and then when these crepe myrtle come out, they all migrate over there.
Hmm.
And that's about the only thing that they're attacking in their yard.
That's a kind of surprising, because usually they don't, you know, crepe myrtles are not necessarily prone to that. I would say there's not really anything else other than what you were talking about, the ladybugs. And this year, a lot of the sort of the predatory type insects, their sequence has been thrown off. There's, you know, people have, you know, emailed me, you know, asked me about it. Why haven't we seen this? Why isn't this? And it's, you know, it's hard to know with our crazy weather. But other than using an insecticidal soap or something that's nice and safe, there's nothing else you can really do.
Well, okay, I'll get busy with the sprayer again.
So, I mean, you could use anything you want to as far as the insecticide. Just the safest thing would be the insecticidal soaps.
Okay. I mix up stuff with a little alcohol, a little peroxide, and some dish soap.
Oh, okay.
And that it does seem to work, but, you know, it's kind of tedious. So.
You got to mix it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you. And again, hey, have a happy birthday.
Well, thank you. And let's head now over to Sharon Jard. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about a redbud tree I planted a couple of years ago. When it came out of winter, the main trunk of it was cracked about 5 foot up, and everything above that crack is dead, and everything below it is alive. So the branches coming off of it have leaves below it. Is there anything I can do about that? Can I cut off the top above the crack, and would it grow okay?
It's hard to say. I don't know why, you know, what would cause that, because red buds are pretty tough, you know, and for just a crack, you know, to, they're not really prone
about
to.
About an inch in diameter there where it, oh, it split.
So there must be some, is that facing the south? Do you know where the actual crack is?
No, I think it's actually facing the east.
Okay. Because I was going to say, so for a crack like that to be that major and for you not to notice it until this year and for it to kill off the entire top of the tree above the crack, that seems a bit extreme. But yeah, just cut off everything that's dead by all means. Don't leave that, and just kind of keep your fingers crossed on what's going to happen to the tree just kind of in general.
Okay. Do you think that that main trunk will start sprouting again?
It should.
That?
Generally, they'll put out sucker growth, but it's not going to look, I mean, it's going to be like little twiggies coming off of it. It's, you're probably not necessarily going to like it, but you might, I mean, you might say, okay, well, let's, you know, this is the same red bud, and that's why I'm happy with it.
Okay. So do you think it'll get taller, though, or is it just going to kind of stay at where I cut it off and just get bushy-like?
No, it should, you know, it should get some elevation to it, some height.
All right. I'll go ahead and cut it off then.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, just realize that if you have a zoysia lawn, it doesn't need as much water as the bluegrasses and fescues. It's more drought tolerant. That's not to say don't water it, but you don't have to, like, really worry about it. So that's one of the advantages of the zoysia, is it is capable of withstanding our summertime temperatures and everything else. Let's head back to the phones. Let's go to Dave's yard in South St. Louis. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Very good.
We have tomato plants growing out of 5-gallon buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're maybe 3.5 to 4 feet out of the bucket.
Okay.
On the lower part of the tomatoes that are starting to show, we have a darkish color, like a purplish color. Friend said maybe it's the soil itself, which is a potting mix from down the street at Bears. And I water them every morning, so any suggestions?
Yeah, it's called blossom end rot, and it's caused by whatever fertilizer you're using or whatever that soil is, it doesn't have enough calcium in it. So in other words, when you buy fertilizer for tomatoes, it'll say it right on there that it contains calcium. That prevents that blossom end rot, and that's what you're experiencing.
Okay. We had gotten the fertilizer right from the same place, the same nursery, and it said about every 2 months to apply this. So I didn't know if that was too sparse a time frame, or what do you think?
I think every 2 months is a little bit extreme. I think probably once a month should be, you know, once every 3 weeks should be adequate.
Correct. Okay. All right. So the watering is not a problem then. All right.
No. But, you know, I mean, what it could be as a result of this, you know, your water pH and everything else, you're just not getting the calcium in there, and it's, you know, that's what's causing this blossom end rot.
All right, so I'll look for something with more of a calcium.
Right, it'll say it right on the box, or look at all the ingredients within the fertilizer. It will list all the different nutrients and micronutrients, max, you know, as well as the other nutrients also.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure.
All righty.
And now let's go to Keith's yard in Collinsville. Hi, Keith.
Hey, are you there?
Yes.
In your 72 years, have you ever heard about the star in a cottonwood tree?
A star in a cottonwood tree. Not that I can think of. What's a star in a cottonwood
tree? About a month ago, I read an article, and that if you take a cottonwood branch that's fallen to the ground, and if you break the branch in two at the knuckle of the branch, you will find a star that looks looks like the lone star on the Dallas Cowboys helmet.
Really?
So I'm surprised you haven't heard about this. So, like, when I first read about this, I went to this park that I always walk my dog, and I found this cottonwood branch, and sure enough, I opened it up, and there is a very distinct 5-point star in that branch. And then when I brought it home to show my family, I guess just the moisture of in the air
evaporated,
kind of filled that star up. So it doesn't, in other words, it's there. And I showed it to this elderly man, and he was 85 years old, and he said, I've never heard of that in my life. So if you got a cottonwood tree in your yard, go out there and, you know, one of the branches that fall to the ground, not a fresh branch,
right,
but a dead branch, snap it at the knuckle, try it a couple of times, and you'll find that star.
Yeah, I mean, we live close to Christie Park. There are several cottonwood trees, and these are huge trees, so they're constantly dropping branches, so I'll give it a shot and see if I can find any stars.
They're really small, not the big limbs,
right,
you know, just the little branches that fall to the ground.
Right, yeah, to break a big branch would be a little bit tough.
I'm surprised you hadn't heard that.
No, haven't heard that one.
So check it out.
Okay, that sounds pretty good.
All right.
Thanks you, and thanks to everybody for calling in. I greatly appreciate it. If you want to, this time of year, and you feel like you want to grow some things from seed, this would be the time of year when you'd be planting Zinnia, Cosmos, Alyssum, Pansies, Marigold, or Cleome seed, and you get them basically planted by, you know, 4th of July using a potting mix for starting plant material, and that's going to make sure that you're going to have things that's blooming later in the season. That's one of the real pluses of, you know, doing sort of a second series of planting by seed, or just if you haven't planted anything by seed this year because of the way the weather was and everything else, go ahead and do it. So, I mean, you're going to have, you know, plants are going to be blooming between, let's say, Halloween and Thanksgiving. That's, you know, the kind of the real plus of that. As I said before, if you've got iris, regardless of what type it is, whether it's Siberian, whether it's Japanese iris, whether it's traditional, you know, flags, right after they bloom, that would be the time that you want to do the dividing. And just realize also, if you have a plant that is less than a year in the ground in that location, we've had some really harsh weather related to water. And if the root system gets dehydrated, recovery can be really tough on a young plant, and young meaning in the ground less than 1 year. So just keep that in mind. Do not fertilize any kind of trees or shrubs after the 4th of July, because what that could do is the plant, by the time it, let's say, gets the nutrients up through the root system into the, you know, the budded, it could push some growth out, and then that growth is going to be very prone, even though it's not going to be really obvious, that the buds could get frozen due to the wintertime. So no fertilizer on trees or shrubs, you know, this time of year. After the 4th of July, none. So don't do it. Just don't do it. And looks like we're going to have a, you know, crazy day and everything else. It should be real fun. And thanks to everybody for calling in, and thanks for the couple of people that wished me a happy birthday. Mike Miller, I will see you next week.
This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
You read labels on your food because what's in it matters. Dirty Labs brings that same thinking to your dishes. In other words, what touches your food matters too. Dirty Labs is proving that cleaning doesn't have to be so dirty. So they created a dishwasher detergent designed to deliver conventional levels of clean without the toxic chemicals or residue. Because the plates and forks your family eats from deserve the same care as the food you put on them. Fall in love, or it's free, at DirtyLabs.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best.
Let's go!
Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhanced game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLBPlus.